Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This morning we are going to have a topic that I think, well, we all need to be aware of. Is it going to be an especially pretty topic? No, because it's going to be dealing with the facts of true crime online. That's the title of my guest book. And this is real stuff about what is happening with the marvelous electronic technology that we are using even at this moment, but how in the hands of some individuals it is something that, well, it gets downright scary. I want to welcome to my show J.A. Hitchcock. And Jane, you're a woman that decided to get into a topic, true crime, online. What in the world motivated you to go after this research? This is unbelievable information.
Well, it's one of those things that back in 1996, I was actually stalked online. And it turned out to be two people, a husband and wife, that forged my identity online and did everything in their power to make my life miserable because I basically blew the whistle on a scam that they were doing.
Oh, my heavens. Now, how was this done, Jane? You live in Maine. We, you know, in the world today, people are as close as a button on a smartphone, a computer, bingo, they can communicate. And this has changed the world of crime phenomenally, hasn't it?
Oh, definitely. Anything online can be used against you, unfortunately. It just amazes me, the stories that I read about all the time.
Now, for you, because this was a personal experience, when you started doing your research, what was the first trigger that made you say, I've got to do something about this? I need to inform people, not just because of what I've gone through. What was it that really spurred you to write? Because your stories, and these are real stories in the book, True Crime Online, you have gotten very specific in your detail. This has to be very time-consuming to do this research.
Actually, several of the stories in the book were victims that I had worked with or worked with their families, and that was kind of the beginning of it all. I approached my publisher who had published my previous book called Net Crimes and Misdemeanors, which was more like an online safety book, and I said, you know, I said, people love true crime, but I haven't seen any books that talk about things that start online and then end up going offline. And the very first chapter about Amy Boyer is one that I experienced through her stepfather and her mother, who were put in contact with me by the police department when she was killed by a young man. And no one knew at the time how they knew each other. And it turned out he had a secret obsession with her and was posting about it online. And it just got out of control until he killed her and then killed himself. So that was, it's not only the first chapter in the book, but it's something that I was personally involved in.
Now, I want my listeners to know, Jane, that you're an internationally recognized cybercrime expert. You work with the U.S. Department of Justice for Victims of Crime, the National Center for Victims of Crime, and law enforcement agencies worldwide. You also are very active in supporting and passing laws regarding the Internet, because this is a whole different level of crime that is being committed in its own unique format, if you will. You also do law enforcement training seminars, and you talk all over the country about this, and you've been on television shows, and you're part of volunteer organizations. One of them is Working to Halt Online Abuse, and also Kids Teens Division of that same organization, and we'll give some of that information out as we go along. Now, cyberstalking. This is a word that Denise Brown, in the foreword of your book, brings out, and she said, with the internet, this is becoming so pervasive. And she gives a stat that I was just amazed at. In the internet, when it became really accessible to the general public in 1993, there were only 5,000 websites. As of March 2012, there are now 640 million websites. What a phenomenal number. And this is all around the world, am I correct?
Oh, yes, definitely. And you know that since that time, that was a year ago, that number has probably increased by another 100,000 at least.
Amazing. Now, you mentioned your very first story about Amy, and of course, in your book, The True Crime Online, you go into more detail. But some of these stories, they almost seem like they couldn't be real. The mentality of the people that are involved with this. It just, in my mind, I wonder, why do people go this way? It's almost as if they enter a world of imagination that doesn't touch reality. Do you find that some of these people that are involved in these crimes are living in something like a fantasy world?
I'm not sure if it's that, but I totally agree with you. I don't know why they do what they do. I mean, you're going through the book, and when I was doing the research, I kept finding new things, and I'm sitting there going, why would people do this? If they put all of that energy into something good, it would be so much better, but why do people have to do bad things? And I guess, you know, when you look at it, the same thing can be said for criminals in the real world, you know, offline. It's the same thing. I don't know what the trigger is that makes them decide to become a bad person.
Now, you have in here a story about a deadly love triangle. And there was the individual Montgomery, and there's also and you've got photos in here. I mean, these are real stories about real people. There's a young man by the name of Brian, a very handsome young man. And tell us what happened here. This is so bizarre. Again, that's why I said, do these people, are they living, or that's the question, are they living in a fantasy land? What is it here? Are we becoming so detached?
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where Brian worked at a company with an older gentleman. Brian was in his 20s, and I believe the older man was in his 50s, and didn't know at the time that they were both communicating with what they thought was a young girl in their late teens, early 20s, and who was leading the both of them on. And come to find out, the girl was actually an older woman, and she had taken her daughter's name. She was using her daughter's name and her daughter's photos to entice the both of them. And when the older man found out that Brian was also communicating with the girl, he shot and killed Brian in the parking lot where they worked. And then it all came out about the woman the girl not being a girl, but being this woman. And it just was crazy. And I've been in touch with Brian's parents, and, you know, they're very, very nice, you know, to let me use his photo and use his story. And it just breaks my heart seeing things like this. And not only that, I mean, of course, the man got jail time for what he did, but the woman got nothing. No jail time, nothing. And I still don't understand why.
Are you serious? She was not at all made accountable for her behavior?
No. She was obviously embarrassed that it went that far, and I know that Brian's parents were thinking at some time of maybe bringing a civil suit against her, but, you know, quite honestly, they probably wouldn't get anything out of her. But it's just one of those things where she was not punished at all because she didn't commit a crime.
Amazing. Just absolutely amazing. Yet her actions created an environment of resentment and jealousy, causing the death of an innocent young man.
Yep.
It's just human behavior is really amazing. Has this sort of soured you in your attitude about people in doing this research?
No, not at all. Having done it for so many years, you know the ins and outs of it. I certainly know how to stay safer online. Nobody will ever be completely, 100% safe, but at least I know what not to do and what to do. And as a matter of fact, I met my husband on an online dating site, and we'll be celebrating our 5th anniversary next month. So there's a lot of good out there, too.
All right, let's talk about how we can protect ourselves online. There have been more and more stories coming to surface about men and women being victimized. Now, if you go back in history, there always were the columns trying to find somebody to be a companion with. I mean, goodness gracious, you go back far enough in history, there were the mail order brides, all kinds of things like this that have always gone on. And you mentioned how you met your husband through an online dating site. For the men and women that are listening to this, maybe they'd like to do the same, but they've heard these horrible stories, both men and women being terribly victimized financially, sometimes physically, emotionally, mentally, even spiritually. There are all of these ugly things that you hear. What are the steps to protect the self?
Well, if you're considering online dating, I tell anyone who asks me for advice, be realistic. Try and stay as local as possible. When I went online, I specifically said I wanted somebody within 2 to 3 hours of me, and I still got men from Texas and Montana and Florida trying to, and I was very firm in it. No, I need somebody that will be close enough to me that if it works out, we can combine our households in one place or the other, and you just have to stick to your guns. And because a lot of the scams that you see and a lot of the bad things that happen are usually when it turns out that the man or the woman that they're involved with online at the dating site are in another state or very far away. And you need to keep it as local as possible because you need to, once you get past the email part of it, and then you talk on the phone, and then you should be able to meet in person in a public place. And if there are any inconsistencies with that whatsoever, then drop it and find somebody else. And I know it's so hard because there are so many people out there looking for that one true love, and when they think they found it, but that person starts asking them for money or says, I'll pay for your trip out here or this or that. It just, when you start getting to that, it should raise a red flag, quite honestly. And I just recently found out about a woman who had met somebody on a Christian dating website. And, and she thought, his photos, he looked great. And he talked to her over, it wasn't Skype, but it was a Skype-like service. But every time she tried to get him to do a video on Skype or something else, he kept saying there was something wrong with his web camera or this or that. And then he said, I'm late on my mortgage. I just need a couple hundred bucks. She started sending him money, and she ended up sending him over $45,000 before she realized that there might be something wrong with it. And it turned out the guy was in Nigeria somewhere. He wasn't even in the United States. And it was because she fell in love with a picture. And, and that's another thing. If the photos are too good to be true, they probably are. If it looks like a model, it's probably not that person. And it's so hard because people just want to fall in love, and they want that person to be the person.
Well, you've got a story in here about Amy Larson, and she had wanted to help out a friend who was being pestered by a man by the name of Franklin Fink. Tell us that story?
Well, Amy actually is somebody I worked with her. She's another case that I worked with, and she was a volunteer with us for a while, and we've remained friends ever since. But, yeah, she was just trying to help a friend online, and Frank turned his attention from her friend to her and became obsessed with her and sent her, like, teddy bears. And when she graduated from high school, sent her a check, and she would throw everything in the trash. And when she graduated from high school and moved to California to go to college, she thought it would end there. But no, it didn't. He would instant message her. He would change his away message so that it was directed to her. He would write posts about her online, and I got involved and began filing complaints against his internet service provider and the websites where he was posting. And he actually at one point tried to turn his attention to me, and I just put the kibosh on that one. And she ended up filing, you know, with a report with the police in Connecticut, where she lived at the time. And even though she was in San Diego, he kept bothering her, and they finally arrested him. I mean, it took forever for her to get anything done, but they finally arrested him, and he did get some jail time.
Now, how has this changed police work? You are involved with the police departments, with the FBI. You're involved in training. This is something that I would imagine presents a whole new level of challenge for the police. I mean, we look at national events that have just happened recently and information that was spread out over the internet by the perpetrators. All of this is there, and this really has to require a big shift in thinking about criminal behavior, doesn't it?
Yeah, they have to realize that if somebody is being stalked or harassed offline, it's probably going to end up online. They have to take it just as seriously. You get some cops that are great at what they do, and they work with the victim, and you get the other ones that say, well, you don't have to go to that website, or you don't have to open that email, just stay off the computer, and that's not the answer, because you don't tell a stalking victim, well, just stay in the house. I mean, you can't do that. You can't just, because there's so much of your life that is online for many, many people, as well as offline, that they shouldn't be told that they can't go to certain places online or do certain things. And when I train the police, I basically train them. This is how you track somebody down. This is how you contact the internet service provider, or, you know, Facebook has specific guidelines for law enforcement, and different things like that, and train them in the latest things that are being used and how to work not only with the ISPs and the website, but also work with the victims. Let the victim know what they need to provide to the police as proof. Make sure it really is harassment or stalking. And I take them through sample cases, and we track down, you know, through the sample cases, we actually track down the person that's doing it to their internet service provider and go from there. So when I do the training, I try and make it simple but effective, I guess is the best way to put it, because I don't want to go way too much over their heads, or else they might get confused. But it does a lot of good knowing that what I train them to do that they can use in their everyday work.
And this is something that I think a lot of parents are very concerned about, because the kids of today very much communicate with this technology, and a lot of young men and women are taking photos, putting themselves up online. All of this information is out there. What would you say to someone that is getting emails and they say, well, I've seen this online, that online, and they're really not all that involved? I think of some older individuals that I know. They maybe have some interaction on the website, but they really aren't as involved as the younger generation is. What would you say to them if they find themselves being compromised by emails or having all kinds of information that's being given about them, and they go, wow, this must be real? How can they protect themselves?
Well, the best thing that they can do is if they are receiving emails or messages, or they find out that somebody's posting about them online, is to first of all, keep it or make copies of it, do screenshots, something, copy down the URL or the website link of where it is, and keep track of it. And I try and tell victims the best thing to do is try and keep a timeline. When did it start? What was the first way it started? And then go from there so that if they do have to go to the police, they have a record of it, and then they can print out the emails and all that information. The best thing to do is to file complaints yourself with the Internet service provider if you know what one that is, if it's a website, if it's a moderator. Just try and file complaints yourself first. Try not to be overly emotional in the complaints and just a very basic, I'm being harassed by one of your users. Following is proof of what is going on. Could you please help me before this escalates? And if it still doesn't do anything, they can go to an online organization like mine, and that's at halt abuse.org, and we help victims for free. We keep them anonymous. We don't contact the stalker or the harasser, and we work with the ISPs and the websites, et cetera, and try and get it resolved. And as of this date, and we've been around since 1997, we've resolved over 70% of the cases that we get without involving law enforcement or a lawyer.
Wow. Now, that's quite a statement, and I'm sure that would be very comforting to people. Let's talk about one last case, and that is your chapter on stalking ghosts. Jason Hawes and his buddy in 1990 co-founded a ghost hunting organization called the Atlantic Paranormal Society. But things got scary because he ended up getting stalked by an individual who was threatening his family.
You must be reading my mind, because those are all three cases that I actually worked on. Jason got in touch with me and let me know. He said, I hope you can help. He goes, the FBI is working on this. And I said, okay, send me the emails with something that's called full headers. I instructed him on how to do that. And I said, I'll see what I can do, but I don't want to step on the FBI's toes. But I'll see what I can do. So he sent me the email and gave me a basic rundown of what was going on. It turned out that this person was calling himself a serial killer, spelled C-E-R-E-A-L, and was sending emails to every email address on their website as well as on the Ghost Hunters website. He's got the show on the Sci-Fi Channel, you know, producers and things like that were getting emails claiming that he was going to stalk and kill and rape his wife and his children when he was off hunting ghosts. And so I went through the emails, and Jason had told me that the FBI had tracked them down to, I believe it was Ohio, and I wrote back and I said, well, I said, you might want to let them know that the headquarters for that ISP is in Ohio, but these messages were actually coming from three different libraries in Pennsylvania. And I gave him the information. He passed that along. And it turned out that what this man would do was he would go to Yahoo, open up an email account, send out a bunch of emails to all the people, close down that email account, and then the next time you go to a different library, you'll open up another new email account and do the same thing. And he was clever. And not smart, but he was clever. And the FBI was having a hard time finding out what was going on until they realized that there were certain days and times that he was at these libraries, and they finally caught him where they were at the library, and they pulled him away from the computer just as he was about to hit the submit button. And what he did was he opened up an email account in Jason's name, pretending to be Jason, sending a death threat to the president. He was trying to get Jason investigated. And that's what kind of broke the whole thing. And it turned out he was in his 50s. He lived in with his parents. He really had no job, no money, no nothing. And he just was another person that became obsessed with Jason and the show, and it was just amazing when he was arrested. He said, well, I'm a big fan of his. It's like, I'm going, oh my goodness, what the heck? You know, if you're a fan, you don't do crazy stuff like that.
Yes, and his communication was just vile. I mean, it was hideous, the information that he was putting online, the details. It was horrific. But also,
I'm sorry. It's just that, you know, I posted it just as Jason had received it, and I have to warn people, if they do get the book, it's pretty raunchy language, is in mm-hmm. a lot of swear words that I can't say on the radio, but it's
right.
That's exactly what was sent to him.
Now, we've all heard the stories about bullying, about YouTube videos being put up, and sadly, what is really disheartening, I think, to many people is that a lot of this is being done by kids, and it's a form of bullying, and it has caused the aspect of bullying to rise to a whole different level. YouTube is obviously seen by billions of people around the world. How can one take something off? Let's say something is put up on YouTube that is totally fraudulent, or they're using it to try to humiliate someone, do something like this. What do you do?
You have to contact YouTube, and if it's, let's say that, and you've probably seen these videos of kids beating up other kids and they post them online, and I don't understand what they're thinking is behind that, because they're going to be identified.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing their faces, and names will be associated with it, and you need to contact YouTube. And if that doesn't work, then definitely, if it was like a beating or worse, go to the police and file a report and say, hey, this is up there. I tried contacting YouTube and getting it pulled, but this is what happened. And they can use that as evidence, and they can take care of it and go to YouTube and get it taken down. Not only that, but find out who it was that posted it and eventually finding out who was in the videos.
You have stories where there's been the involvement of revenge. There has been so much of the human persona at its worst. And when you bring this out, I know that you're doing it because you want people to be aware that this side of life does exist. It doesn't pay to keep our heads stuck in our own mental sandbox without being aware of what's going on. So let's go over, you also bring out information about Craigslist, and there was a case in the Seattle area, which is where I'm located, that really was quite specific. And you give so many good points of information in your book. Let's repeat quickly the four or five steps that people always need to keep in their mind whenever they are posting anything online. What should they be cognizant of?
Are you referring to it if you're doing like Craigslist or eBay or something like that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, anytime, and my husband and I have bought and sold many things on Craigslist, the best thing to do is contact the person if you're buying or if you're selling, you know, communicate. And if you agree on a deal, try not to do the deal at your home. Try and do it in a public place. If you do it at home, make sure there are other people at your house at the same time. The very few times that my husband and I have sold something on Craigslist, we actually invited friends over for a barbecue. So there were a bunch of people here when the people showed up to pick up the item. And it's common sense, because if you're in a public area and something goes wrong, there are other people around. And if you're in a public area and something is about to go wrong, the other person is probably not going to go through with it, knowing that there are other people around. And I guess that's the biggest thing, is just trying not to do transactions at your home. And that's what happened to that couple when they advertised a ring for sale on Craigslist, was they allowed these people to come into their house, and the husband ended up being killed.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your website, Jane, that people can go to find out more about your work and the information you have posted there?
Well, if they want to get more information about the book, it's truecrime-online.com. If they're interested in getting help or just tips on staying safer, they can go to haltabuse.org, and that's HALTABUSE. And then our kids and teen division is haltabuseKTD.org.
Would you repeat that one more time?
All three of them?
Yes.
Okay. The book is truecrime-online.com. Working to Halt Online Abuse is haltabuse.org. And our kids and teen division is haltabuseKTD.org.
Wonderful. Jane Hitchcock, it's been a delight having you as a guest on the show. Thank you so much. What you've done, I think, is a tremendous service to the public. And I think that though these crimes online, your book, True Crime Online, they are shocking. But I think it's important to be aware that there are people in this world that are of a thinking process where most of us will just shake our heads at and wonder why. We'll never perhaps ever know all the answers to that. But it is something, it pays to know what's happening so that we can take those steps to protect ourselves in the best capacity possible and to be aware that there are ways of communicating with law enforcement agencies as well as the servers that we utilize to enjoy this wonderful technology. Jane Hitchcock, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome. I'm up here in beautiful, snowy white Fairbanks, Alaska. Yes, who would have thought we would have needed long johns while we're up here visiting, but that's the way it goes. However, the blue skies above betray the fact that they have had so much snow, and here we are on the 2nd of May, where they expected to be able to start all kinds of spring-summer activities. I still got to deal with the snow. This is one of the coldest winters, the extended winters that they've ever had, believe it or not, in January. And also, I think somebody said December and January. They had temperatures that were up in the 60s, which was very unusual for them. And then Mother Nature decided to surprise them, which Mother Nature has a way of doing that up here in the far north, keeping us on our toes. But I would invite you to give me a call if you would like to chat. Telephone number, toll-free, lines are now open, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, though my guest, Jane Hitchcock, we were talking about some of the ugly things that have been happening with technology, I thought I'd share something positive with you. I have in front of me a photograph of a boy running, or actually he's on a skateboard, but it's not just a drawing that's done. This is actual carbon monoxide molecules that were put together in a stop-action movie. It's the tiniest one that has ever been done. I mean, this is something to me that is just fascinating, the way people's minds work, and they take something that you can't even see with your own eyes and create the tiniest stop-action movie ever made. It's 1 minute long. It has individual carbon monoxide molecules that rearrange themselves, showing the boy doing all kinds of activity. And it's titled A Boy and His Atom. Now, it's the first time that it has been done. Something like this has been done before, but this is the first time it was made into a one-minute movie where there was ongoing action. And it is something that is setting a precedent because it's all of these molecular, well, let me put it this way. Every frame that is done for this is 45 by 25 nanometers, and there's 25 million nanometers in an inch. Magnified, they say it reminds you of what the early videos like Pac-Man were like, you know, very simple, very fast-moving, but very, very simple. And they even have music and sound effects with this. So it is actually getting into the Guinness Book of Records. Now, this is what IBM used. Yes, they're the ones that put this together. Remotely operated two-ton. Now, wrap your mind around this visual. It's a remotely operated two-ton scanning tunnel microscope. Now, this massive microscope is in San Jose, California. It magnifies a surface more than 100 million times. It operates at 450 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. Below zero. And they said the cold makes this possible, that extreme cold, 450 degrees below zero. What happens is the atoms then become still. He said otherwise they'd be moving around at their own room temperature. So they use this microscope, this two-ton microscope, to control a super sharp, very, very tiny needle along a copper surface. And at one nanometer, which is so tiny, the needle attracts the carbon monoxide molecules, pulls them to the particular location on this copper surface they want it to be on. And the dots that make up the figures in the movie, they're oxygen atoms inside the molecule. I know, it is just, it's amazing. But the principles are not unlike those that Disney used in the early days of animation. But these scientists for this one-minute movie, 242 still images that makes up the 242 frames, and he said they are trying to make data smaller. That's right. And as data creation consumption, well, as more and more people are using technology, they have to be able to store data smaller and smaller all the way down to the atomic level. Amazing, isn't it? It's incredible when you think of that. When you think of what has evolved just in a very short span of time. Look at how you can carry around a little chip, 8, 16, 24, 32 gigabytes on a tiny little square, well, it's more like a rectangular piece of what appears to be plastic. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Will we have nanobots that will help keep people healthy? Will we have nanobots that will enable surgeons to be more efficient in surgery? Only time will tell. We are moving forward because of people thinking outside of the box in incredible ways, incredible manners of expression that we, well, they just thought was just science fiction. And there's material that's coming across my desk even today where people are concerned about a lot of these things on multiple levels. But as long as there's opportunity for expansion, for development, as long as imagination reigns, the sky is the limit. Actually, shouldn't I say the universe is the limit? Because we are going to be exploring all kinds of things. This is going to enable us to do space travel. This is going to enable us to do so many more things than ever imaginable. Let's step back in time, just in a comparison with what was done. Think of Leonardo da Vinci. Do you know that on today's date, May the 2nd, that he passed away in France? He was 67 years old. 67 in our world today is nothing. That's middle age. In his world, it was very, very old. This is a man that envisioned the helicopter. This is a man that had images of the future. that he had to be very careful about what he shared because he would have been put to death. When was this? 1500s. 1500s. Ah, yes. Time has changed. Donna Sebo here. I'm up here in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm going to be in Anchorage tomorrow. And if any of you listening wanted to be in touch with me, if you're in Alaska and you'd like to meet with me while I'm on the trip, give me a call at my office at 253-582-5604. 253-582-5604. So much is going on in this world of ours, and I think it's amazing when we can get information about people that are thousands of miles away from us in just seconds. And this is something that is, gee whiz, we just take it for granted, don't we? Wasn't that long ago, again, when that was not possible. Just go back to the 1990s. Go back to early 2000. We're moving at an incredible rate. I wanted to share a fun story with you regarding coincidence. Have you ever found yourself thinking about someone or been in a situation where maybe you're in a community or a town and you're thinking about a particular thing and bingo, there it is? Well, let me share a story with you about a woman. Her name is Peggy. She lives in Ohio. She said her very, very dear friend always loved making special cards. She'd use them as gifts. And she loved decorating them. She had all kinds of items, rhinestones. She had calligraphy she'd gotten involved with. Well, Pat was just a wonderfully creative person. And she never forgot an occasion. She never forgot her friends, her family, grandchildren. Didn't make any difference. It was always a joy to get something from Pat because she was so creative. Well, Pat passed away after a very, very long illness. And all of her items were packaged up and taken to her local church. And it was all in one big box. And they said, well, if any of you just want some of the things, that's great, or you can buy the whole box. Well, Peggy, for sentimental value, she took some of the items because it just reminded her of Pat. This was a very dear friend. She had loved a great deal. Well, she was looking one day at the materials that she had gotten from Pat, and she was thinking about it because she was going to take some of the items that she had gotten from Pat's box and to create something for one of her grandchildren. And she said, you know what? I was just thinking about our dear friend Pat. Wouldn't it be nice if she could be with us to help put something together? Well, it wasn't possible. Well, one day she went back to her church, and here was all of this activity that was going on. Then all of a sudden, she noticed some of the items that were out on the table. And the person looked at the items that were there, and there happened to be an envelope, and she opened up the envelope. And here was one of her friend's Pat's handmade cards, beautifully done. Brought back a lot of memories. But when they looked at the card, the card was signed by a person by the name of Tiffany. Well, as it turned out, Tiffany had picked up all of the items from the sale, all of Pat's items. She'd gotten the whole box, and she was decorating these cards and had given them to the church so that they could be passed out to the children. She said, you know what? After Peggy and Pat and Tiffany were introduced and they were talking about these items that had been in this box that had belonged to Peggy's friend Pat, Tiffany said, I always enjoy buying craft items. And when I bought these items at the church, I just couldn't resist making a very special card for this particular person. And Peggy said it was so amazing. Here, her friend's wonderful items had been picked up by someone, and they had made a full circle back from the very place they had been sold at, back again as an expression of appreciation by the woman who had purchased them. to an individual at the organization. And it had brought her in contact with Peggy. It was a wonderful memory. It was a series of coincidences that brought people together. It was almost as if Pat was saying, I want you to know I'm still around. I'm still around. Good story. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. I've got a recipe to share with you and some other good things. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to say I am going to be again here in Anchorage, and for those of you, I'll be there tomorrow morning. That's where I'm going to be broadcasting from. And if you'd like to meet with me, those of you in Alaska, if you want to be in touch with me while I'm up in your beautiful state, then give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. Cranberries, walnuts, dessert. Does that sound good? Yes, it's always good. I don't know about you, but I've got a sweet tooth, and I don't think I ever want to get rid of it because I do enjoy delicious desserts. But sometimes a dessert, when we think of it, we think it's got to be sort of heavy, you know, really laden with calories. I don't think so. I think you can have something like a 5-minute cranberry walnut cobbler. How does that sound to you? Well, it's easy enough to make, and it's delicious, and it's a perfect end, a light end to a meal that satisfies, well, that little bit of need for something sweet. Now, this is how simple it is. First of all, you want to preheat your oven to 350 degrees, and in a 9-inch pie pan, you combine these ingredients. You're going to combine 2.5 cups of fresh or frozen cranberries, 3/4 cup of chopped walnuts, 1/2 cup of sugar, and there's also going to be, well, let's see, you need 1/2 cup plus 3/4 cup of granulated sugar. You've also got as ingredients 2 large eggs. You're going to need 1.5 sticks of unsalted butter, and you need 1/4 teaspoon almond extract and 1 cup of all-purpose flour. So let me start it over again. In a pie pan, you take your cranberries, your walnuts, and 1/2 cup of sugar. Now you want to toss that until it's coated. In another bowl, you take your eggs, your butter, which should be melted, the remaining sugar, and your almond extract, and you blend it all together. Then you want to fold in your flour and a little bit of salt until it's combined. And it's just a tiny pinch of salt. If you don't want to do that, just use salted butter. It's very simple. Then you pour the batter over your cranberry mixture in the pie pan. Bake it for 40 minutes. The crust will come out golden. Fruit is bubbly. It's 8 servings. 4 hearty servings if you want a bigger portion. But it's something that is so easy to fix. And you're getting vitamin C, you're getting the wonderful nutrition from the walnuts. It's really, really good. But I'll tell you, you will need the sugar. Cranberries are bitter. So use the real stuff. The Splenda and the artificial sweeteners, just don't cut it with the flavors in this. This is very, very good. And I just think it's so easy, it's so pretty, and oh, does it smell good. I know you'd enjoy it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008 is our toll-free number if you'd like to give me a call. Next week, we are going to have a great guest. Actually, tomorrow, the guest, Scott Lesnick, that we're going to have on. We're going to be talking about Kid Jacked, A Father's Story. Now, we often hear about moms who try to find kids that are stolen from them. There's been kidnappings by grandparents, etc. But this is the first time I've ever heard of a father's side, of what he had to do to bring his children from a foreign country back into the United States. It's an incredible story. On Monday, we're going to be talking about joy potential. Robert Sharp is a man that has a magic way with the pen and relates a phenomenal story about a man and his journey in finding out what life is really all about. Ettore Grillo, we are going to be traveling to Italy to talk with a man who has been on a spiritual journey for a good portion of his life and how his uncle has made such an impact on his thinking. Good story, and it shows you no matter where you are in the world, a journey is a journey, and when you can take the time to write it out, it can really affect other people's lives in a wonderful way. We're also going to be talking about the basic practices of the healing Tao. William Wei is going to be my guest. This is a healing procedure that you can learn to do. A lot of these skills, techniques that have been hidden for centuries, only a very few people were ever allowed to learn about certain techniques because it involved years of training. Well, now there is this awareness where they're saying we've got to share our knowledge because we need to heal ourselves, the world we're in, we're going through traumatic change. Let's spread the wisdom. And that is what William is going to be doing. Prostate cancer breakthroughs, Dr. Jay Cohen. Yes, I am focusing on the guys next week with good reason. I was talking with a client on this trip who has dealt with prostate cancer, and what he was told to do was terrifying to him. Most men after the age of 60 can experience challenges with the prostate. How can you work with this? What do you do to get past the fear that the cancer of the prostate could take your life? Well, this physician was challenged, and this is his story, and how he was able to heal himself and what he did to do it. And it goes into a level of alternative medicine that I think you will find interesting. Also, we're going to be talking with Stephen Booner about healing Lyme disease co-infections. Lyme disease is something that is, oh my goodness, it has just spread. Lyme disease is caused by a tick and the bite of a tick, and when it's passed into someone's body, it may be years before it really manifests itself, but I've known entire families that were affected by Lyme disease, and it wasn't detected for years. In fact, people really basically just ignored it. Well, it is not something to be ignored because it does affect your autoimmune system quite seriously. So this is a dynamic week. Yes, it is a week for the guys. But I'll tell you what, I think you'll find, gals, that it is really going to be informative for you and that each of these people have something very special to offer us to try to make this life of ours a better one and a healthier one to live. This is Donna Sebo, and I realize that we're out of time. I'm so delighted you've been able to share this time with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It is so important for you to realize that you are the one that's in charge of your emotions. You're the one that's in charge of how you respond to things. Life is not a straight line, but when we're mindful about what we're going through, we then are going to be able to make choices about how we respond to what's going on. Learn, be willing, be open to new ideas, new concepts. There's a lot about life that is absolutely amazing. Exciting. After all, now we're doing movies with nanoparticles. Believe it or not, that's the truth, and there's much more to come. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day wherever you are, and we'll be talking again tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.